folks. Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, Jaybird.
Hey, Steve.
What's the word up north? Is it as cold as it is down? It's freezing.
Well, I heard it's snowing everywhere. What
winter
I talked to last
is here.
Night? Yeah, you were driving home last night from guiding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but all of a sudden, bam! You're like, snowing out.
I was up at elevation, up on the plateau. And it was like flurries, and I was like, no, went from 64 to a high of like 34. Brutal. Lovely. Winter is here. Tomorrow morning when I set out, it'll be like 28, I believe. So,
ouch. Yep. Broke about the same here.
Broke. It's just, it's cold, cold, cold. Definitely down south, we went from, oh, it's never going to get cold to, hello, welcome to winter. Broke out the float suit yesterday. I have an ice fishing suit that I wear. Thank goodness. I freeze, man. I hate the cold.
Absolutely. One of those survival, it's a flotation thing, right?
Well, it's like one of those, it's I don't want to say the brand or whatever, but it's one of those like ice fishing survival suits that float kind of deal, but it's so freaking warm, it's ridiculous. I went from a hoodie and jeans to that, but I'm not cold. I can say that much. It looks spiffy.
It'll rebound for you. It probably won't rebound here.
Not that hard. Well, and it's just one of those things is we're into the season of the hardcore.
Yeah.
You're looking
hardcore
to catch
anglers.
Yeah. Big fish. Do we still have suckers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got suckers. Yeah.
You know,
Tube Screamer's been getting out. He went out in the snow yesterday or Friday.
Nothing's iced up yet.
No ice. Yeah, the small lakes will start freezing soon here as soon as the wind lays down. Because the forecast is like, you know, I don't think it's supposed to hit freezing for a high for the next 7 days. So pretty bad.
But some of your big water's going to be open, though, I think.
That'll be open for a while.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, if you're looking to catch a Northwoods hog.
Now's the time.
Anyway, well, we're going to do the crazy read the water. I've written notes, Jay. Can you believe that or not?
Yeah.
I wrote a couple notes here so I don't get too off of the path, which is going to happen.
I think it might.
Stream of consciousness ramblings incoming. But before we get there, came up with some cool stuff here. We are doing flash sales. Flash.
Remember? Gordon. Yeah, no, we got flash sales at the Muskie Shop.
If you if you come in dressed like one of the Birdmen from Flash Gordon the movie, 15% off. I'm teasing. Maybe. That's pretty hefty costume. Flash sale. So Sunday, that's when we record this thing most days. By the time this is up, you'll have just a few seconds left. 15% off Supernaturals. I believe the crazy thing coming up is we're actually doing a flash sale. I think it's what, Titans and what else tomorrow, Jay?
Put me on
Grandma's?
The spot. Yeah, I think Nine Inch Grandma's, Titans, and is tomorrow Mayhem, like Junior Cowgirls maybe?
Something.
15% off. Titans, 15% off?
Never happened before. Never happened again. So, you got
great deal.
You got that going on. You get your grandma's. That's going to be cool. And so, I guess, what, until Black Friday?
No, before that. Because our Black Friday sale, the big sale, will actually start before Thanksgiving. But these are exceptional discounted flash sales that we've got. Basically, three items a day. You know, we've had some nets. We've had mostly lures, but you know, we had a clam net on special and great deals. But yeah, we'll be doing Black Friday too, and I can't say exactly what it's going to be, but it will be awesome. It really will be.
Free delivery on suckers. Jay will drive them to your house. Regardless of where you live, Jay will deliver a live sucker to your house.
Done it. Been there.
No, heading out to Arizona real quick with this sucker. No, it's going to be cool. Good sale. So, you know, it is the time of year for the sale. So I think it's pretty cool. We've never done that before. We got the flash sale. So if you check sort of every day, check on the Muskie Shop app or on just muskieshop.com. It'll tell you what's the flash sale today. Right. You're probably going to miss it by the time you listen to the podcast. But if you hadn't caught on to it, the Supernatural, 15% off on those. How good does it? It doesn't get much better until Titans.
Titans on sale Monday.
What are you going to do, boys? Tighten up. Anyway, other than that, Jay's gearing up for Thanksgiving. He's getting there.
Yep.
He's been priming. Yep. Anyway, all right, let's shut up. Let's see what we can do here. Reading the water. Okay. So a lot of questions, a lot of Q&A questions have come in, a lot of emails. We get so many emails every week. It's unbelievable, and we're appreciative. About a game plan, right? So we've talked structure fishing at one point. If you haven't listened to those, I think there's two structure fishing podcasts.
Yeah, there is.
Right? And there's a seasonality podcast. But it all sort of culminates in some capacity about reading the water. Now, what does reading the water mean? At least in my brain, it means formulating a game plan, basically instantaneously, right? And what I've thought about for the last couple of weeks, and I can't say I've sat here and spent 40 hours on it, but me and Jay have talked on the phone a couple of times and just sort of thought about, how would you put it together? How do you put this thing together in a concise manner, right? Reading the water is objectively, how do we get to an actively feeding muskie as quickly as possible? I think that's what you could distill it down to, wouldn't you say, Jay?
Yeah, I do. I agree, yeah.
You know, how do we step out and we go, 1 + 1 = 2, this is what we're doing. You know, this sort of came up, we were talking about the big trolling fish we got on Muskie Shop TV this year. That big headlock fish trolling. And some other stuff we've done where we walk in on a new body of water and you go, how do we make this happen? Like Jim's birthday, right? Jim and John's birthday. How do we make that happen? And it's getting a read.
Two really good prime examples there. I agree.
It's not examples of care if the fish is big or small. It's more of a, if you understand the scenario that we were in, where you go, never been here before, let's make something happen. Right? How that came together or how things culminate from time on the water and how to get you there quicker. I had a conversation with EJ earlier. I talked to a couple guys that we know in the business and I said, what are your thoughts? And it was like, I don't want to give that up. Right?
Touchy subject for
touchy
some people.
Touchy subject, right?
The guide, yeah.
Yeah. Where people that you know what's going on, you don't want to give that up. So it's about the cues. It's about, we've said it for years on the podcast, make an observation, right? Make an assessment.
Mm-hmm.
In the words of old Greg, do you love me? Make an assessment. I
haven't heard that in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's funny.
That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
So a lot of this, 99% of this is going to overlap, right? As far as we're trying to get to the same place, okay? That place being putting ourselves in the best position to catch a muskie. That's it. Some days you walk out and you go, wow, I hit my first spot and I banged a good one and it was a great day. And the other days you walk out and you go, nothing's happening, right? There's always a muskie that is on the prowl 365 in any body of water. They're not all shut down. Some days are harder than others. The days I get my butt kicked on the boat, it's because I've made a misread, or I'm fishing too fast, I'm fishing too slow, I am out of whack. I'm not dialed in on where I need to be and when I need to be there, right? There's elements there that are not culminating. They're not coming together. And it's all about having a read on the water. So what is, again, to back it up, what does that mean? Looking at the hand that we're dealt and getting down to a zero-sum game, getting down to where we want to be as quickly as possible. So, as far as elements at our disposal, right? How do we read the water? What does that mean? That is calibrating our game plan based upon what is actually happening. I think that's a key statement, Jay. What's actually happening, right? We're not fishing the calendar. We're not going, it's July 3rd, and they're doing this. We're not fishing going, it's January 17th, and they're doing this.
Right, but that's how we all start out.
Right.
That's how we all start out that day.
Right.
I believe.
Right.
At least in some sense.
Well, in to the average angler, the angler that's doing this as a hobby and for funsies or as a cathartic thing, yeah, you're going, okay, it's this time of year and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. Right.
It's this time of year and this is what's going on, say, with the weather.
Right.
Let's say at the bare minimum, you tie those two things together.
Right.
Okay.
So we're going to focus on what's actually going on, not what we think is going on, what is observably going on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is what is happening at this moment. How do we address it? How we dial in on it? How do we play off of it? Okay? That's the most important thing to sort of consider. We're going to talk about seasonality in some capacity, but seasonality is a mute point based upon what is going on, the tangibles, right? Not a concept, a tangible based upon what is going on X, Y, and Z body of water. You might switch bodies of water. It might be this, whatever it might be. But the body of water you're standing on, you're making these observations, you're making these assessments, that's what's happening at that very moment. The other thing I want to say that would be a overarching caveat would be what we have at our disposal, right? Now, you know, on the Steve Paul Super Low, I've got the pan optics, I've got the side scan, I've got all this, I got all that crap. Who cares, right? Put me in a bathtub with a plug in and a row or a paddle to row, I can catch a muskie. But what I want to sort of focus on is having the tools at our disposal, which are simply downscan sonar, the temperature, the depth, and our own eyes and ears, right?
Yeah, the most basic electronics.
Basic. So you can go to the Wally World, and I think I have one for the Jay, the John Boat special that came out of Jay's backyard. It was full of 40 years worth of leaves, folks, and it's now at my house. I have I think it's a whopping 4-inch screen Piranha Max from Walmart on that John Boat, right? However,
what do you need?
That's all you need.
Of course, there's no more room for anything bigger.
Would sink it. But that gives me the temperature and the depth and some semblance of downscan sonar, right? Mm-hmm. So we're going to base it on that. $100. And if you don't have that, for $100 at your local Wally Worlds, you get your hands on something. So we're going to keep the baseline there that we have. Downscan, temperature, and depth. And then... Yep. The other thing is this, just our own eyes, our ears, our own minds, our own observations, and how to read that, right? So, going in to reading the water and the elements that I consider. Now, this is not in any particular order, but they all interplay, right? So, every bit of what we're going to talk about for the next bit interplays. There's intersections, there's corollaries. You will find that element A will affect element B, and conversely throughout the course of everything I've sort of jotted down here. But if you boil down success in muskie fishing, right, the key element in my mind, full stop period, no questions, is weather. Okay. So we got to make a read on the weather. Now, there's no denying that prefrontal is better than postfrontal. Right? As far as ease, as far as accessibility of the fish, as far as their activity level, as far as what's going on with those fish, give me before front, but way, 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 way ranked above after a front. Right? So, understanding where you're at. So you're walking out and sort of my head conception where I've been in this entire we're going to do a Read the Water podcast has been I got a 9 to 5. I'm fishing Saturday morning. What's going on? Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's where my brain's been on this. Now, whether it be your trip to Canada, whether it be your trip for the weekend with the boys or whatever it is, you're not a guide. You're not out there 7 days a week. You don't have that information as far as verbiage that's been delivered to you by someone handed to you. You are in the point where you have to figure this out on your own. That's where I'm conceptually going. So with weather, the first read I want to have, the first observation, the first assessment I want to make is what has gone on with the weather for the last 3 or 4 days? Okay?
History.
So we've talked about it before in some capacity, Jay, that if you're going out on the weekend, you better start looking that week, right? You understand what's going on. So the first way to read what you're going to encounter is understanding the recent history, what's been going on with the weather. That's simply opening your weather app for 5 days before you're going, or 3 days, or a couple days, and having a feel for what is going on there. Are we prefrontal? Are we postfrontal? Are we midfrontal? What is going on?
Pull that up and screenshot it.
Yep.
So you once don't have a day, to guess. Every yep. day for 5 days before your big trip.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting data to look at night after the first day. And you right. know what I mean? Go ahead.
You're right. Which is. I screenshot the weather app all the time where it's like, what was it? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make those observations. So unless you have an impromptu trip that pops up and Joe Schmo says, let's go fishing Friday and it's Thursday night, you're probably going to know, hey, after Johnny's got baseball Saturday morning, I'm hitting the water. So having an understanding where you're at in the weather cycle is super important. Okay. Now, I'm not going to sit here and talk about bait selection per se with all this stuff. But if you know that Saturday's the day and you're hitting it and you are on the second day of a cold front, you know it's time to sort of start the day off with some of this low and slow stuff we've been preaching now for what, Jay? Episode 156, 3 years?
Yeah.
Right?
3 years.
So being prepared for what you're going to encounter. So we're not starting the day with the topwater bucktail. We're not starting the day completely outside of what is going to work, right? So this is all about narrowing the scope of presentation and location. So I talked about what are we trying to get at, Jay? It's trying to catch a muskie, right?
Yep.
So with that being said, all of these reads, all of these considerations are to help you narrow down what is going to work and where is it going to work at. Right? That's mm-hmm. it. What will a muskie eat? Where will he be? What kind of speed considerations to take into account would probably be the only third factor there. That's it. Because at the end of the day, this is about getting a bait into a fish's mouth. One, two, done, right? So we need to understand the historical weather data before we set out. So if you're going out on Saturday, you're going out on Tuesday, whatever it is, you better have a thought process as to what has gone on. Okay?
Totally agree.
So now you could go back to it. Oh, we have reading the weather podcast and all this stuff and all this other stuff. We sit here and wax all going about cold fronts or whatever for eons. But you can quickly ascertain the depth that you will be fishing, right? and the speeds that you will be fishing, and narrow your scope of presentations down by just understanding the weather pattern. Okay? Now, there's a modicum of seasonality involved with this.
Right. Right.
So with that being said, let's take in consideration what you're dealing with right now. Okay, it is getting cold. Things are cold up north. Things are cold down south. And if we're on the upswing barometric pressure-wise, the muskies may not come up to that bucktail topwater level. Hello, right? You know, they're not going to magically just be bashing top raters in November. But you can get a feel for presentations in the 3 to 4 foot zone are going to be applicable because we have frontal movements that lend themselves to that. We have a building barometric pressure.
And yeah, you got to make adjustments.
Right.
You're talking about extreme seasonality here. This is an extreme late season for us. So,
well, but not honing in on that so much as that, you know, that seasonality be considered with the weather. Whereas, and what I'm getting at is we're going to eliminate possible zones based on seasonality, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is if we get a big upswing next week, let's say that things kick up a hair for you next week, right, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
Seasonality tells me, my read on seasonality is leave the 5-inch shallow raters, the bucktails, and the topwaters at home because it is late fall and it's pre-ice up, right?
There you go. Okay.
So let's not consider those. Let's not waste a cast on those. Right? We'll focus on our rubber baits and our mid-level cranks and maybe dive and rises a couple other things. But allow that read to happen where you go, what are the possible options in this scenario? Is what I'm saying, seasonality is based on weather. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, conversely, or we'll come back to a summer pattern, say it's July, right? And it flip-flops. So if I'm on the rise, I want to be on the topwater, the bucktails, the shallow raters, right? And if things are falling, we're going to come back to maybe some of our later in the year presentations, our gliders, our rubbers, those kind of presentations, right? So read the water based on historical data and consider the seasonality based upon what is historically successful. Does that sort of wrap that up in some capacity?
Yeah, that's good. I'd also consider two other points in terms of weather patterns, and that is when you're stepping out, clouds and wind direction.
I can't agree more, but we're going to get there in a second, because the one thing I would say is this is current wind and a couple other things are different animal, right? But I think with weather, Jay, and I think you're going to agree with me, it's basically a synopsis. We're ascertaining how much of a swing will there be in musky location, right? How much of a movement are they going to be willing to make? So back to our June, July, August thing. Weather's going to dictate whether they're in that littoral zone, whether they're in the vegetation, or they're on that first break or that first contact point, right? So weather's going to dictate the movement up and down. So low light conditions dictate how shallow they are, right? Higher bright sun dictate that they're deeper. And then all of that ties back to where they're at structurally, right? So the seasonality and the weather read. So, I mean, what would you say, and not to just beat it to death because we're not going to go into presentation so much as far as the read and understanding where we're at weather-wise. So my summary would be, if we're on the upswing, obviously we're thinking shallower. Now shallow is a relative point based on the seasonality is what we're trying to get at.
I was just going to say the same thing. Right.
Right. So shallow, quote unquote, is relative seasonality wise.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you say? How would you think that weather influences speed? Because we've talked about it that post frontal, the first day of a cold front, we need to be low and slow. Correct. as things ramp up and we're going back in through the cycle, as we're going to prefrontal, things speed up. So for me, that first observation, what is the weather and what has the weather been doing, is imperative to understand where you're at in the cycle of where fish are structurally. Now, I'm not going to go here into the structure podcast for the umpteenth time, but understand what structures they will be using, right? Refer to other structure podcasts based on seasonality and the depths. Now, the weather will allow you to assess where they are at on said structure or cover. Would that be correct?
Okay. Yeah.
So that will dictate where they're at. So weather will say, if I've got a storm coming in, they're higher up on that zone, they're moving to the vegetative zone, or if it's post-frontal, they've moved down, like we've talked about before. So weather's going to be my first observation. There's sort of the thoughts there, right? Secondly, water temperature. We need to make an observation of the temperature of the water. Now, with that being said, Jay, what does everybody do when they try to check a water temp?
What do they do?
Yeah.
I don't follow.
They launch the boat and they look at their graph.
Oh, immediately? Yeah. Without letting it?
I've seen that a million times.
Acclimate.
Right? So first thing, and I'm just telling you, this is just a basic little dummy thing here. Let that transducer acclimate. Don't take that first reading and go, it's 77 here in December.
Mm-hmm.
Let it acclimate, get a feel for it. But something I can tell you that's super important is having a temperature read in the front of the boat, a temperature read in the back of the boat, right? So you got your trolling motor read, you got your console read, you got one in the front, one in the back, possibly. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But don't base what you're doing off of a read that's like, say, whether it be in a river mid-channel or open water while you're driving to spots. Sometimes it's very important to get your boat or your sensor, if you will, into those shallows to understand what's going on. The reason I say this, and it's so important to get a solid read, a fundamental read on what's going on in a body of water, is taking a shallow water reading. And I'm not talking from where you're casting. Up in the foot and a half zone is because at times that water will be colder than that open water. It will be a negative thing. You will have falling water temperatures in the shallows where it might be more stable towards the first break or towards open water. And you might waste your entire morning throwing at that shallower stuff. So what I would recommend doing is every time you launch the boat, obviously, the transducer's acclimated. It doesn't take very long, but, you know, you got a solid, a fundamental read on your open water where you're driving your boat, because rarely where we're driving are we casting, right? But getting up in those shallow areas where you intend to cast and getting a fundamental read on what that shallow zone is doing. So if you find those falling temperatures on the edge, that in conjunction with reading the weather can tell you that muskies are not going to be active. They're not going to be present in those super shallow zones. So if we think, let's say stage one, the weather tells us that muskies will be shallow, Jay, right?
Mm-hmm.
The weather says they're going to be shallow. And we go up in that zone and the open water was reading 58, right? The open water is reading 58. And we get in that shallow and it reads 53. Right? With our surface skimmer, our transducer on the back of the boat, we have a 5-degree temperature discrepancy between open water and the shallows. That might negate any positive weather that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do is we're going to make an observation of what are the shallow water temperatures. Now, the shallow readings are going to dictate whether we are casting or trolling. Right? So if our shallow read is colder than our open water read, it might be time to consider. I'm not considering forage on a downscan yet. I'm going solely water temperature. If the shallows are colder than the open water, you might be more inclined to troll. Now, why is that? Activity level, comfort level for forage and bait fish, without getting into what kind of bait fish we're fishing for. But in general, if that shallow, that 2 foot zone, that 3 foot zone is colder than that open water, the majority of different kinds of forage are going to be more open water oriented than up on that shallow edge. Now, seasonality plays a key here, where if we don't have vegetation that retains warmth, right? So it is only a narrow scope of the year that we actually have vegetation, to be honest with you. Right? Now, vegetation holds heat, and what you hear all the time is in a cold front, muskies and forage will bury themselves in vegetation. Right, Jay?
Yeah.
That's the old right. Mm-hmm. That's the adage. The reason they do that is warmth retention, heat retention. Right? Now, the seasonal read on this is if there's no reason to be up there. So if vegetation takes place and is present at that time, it could be considered important to still cast that. But if we want to go to a baseline for the majority of the year, spring, fall, when vegetation is dead or dying, if we have a temperature discrepancy from the first break line, the first contact point into an open water, and the shallows are cooler as things are cycling down, or even in the spring cycling up, right? The muskies and the forage would be present in open water. So that's how you make that read between, are we going to cast or are we going to troll? So from going from the weather, like we just talked about, we've read the weather. We understand what the cycle is. You know, we're going to check those shallows to understand where they could feasibly be. Okay. Now, one thing that I think is important, this bodes back to what we hear about in spring. You always hear in the spring fish the north end of the lake because it'll warm up faster, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So with that being said, we want to consider the seasonality as far as our temperature reads, and we want to read multiple locations because the north end might play in the spring, but the south end might play in the winter. So as you're checking an area, get in nitty gritty before you start casting it to sort of get a feel on that. And it, because then the reason that's so important to me is going to be that the musky activity levels are going to change commensurate to that water temp. Right. So the corollary between the two, positive weather. If I have positive weather, I have a building barometer, but I have colder shallows, open water casting, open water trolling. If I have, you know, negative weather and warmer shallows than open water, then I'm going to target that zone. So that's the read there between weather and water temp just off the rip.
Just because, you know, it's great weather, it's great looking musky weather, does not, you know, necessarily mean it's going to be a great shallow bite, though.
Absolutely. That's the thing. You've got to make those assessments on shallow water, mid water, deep water. The thing I'll say is this, as far as like, we talked about tools at our disposal, downscan, temperature, depth. You know, that doesn't mean we're not probing. You guys have heard me say it before of I have a deep water depth deep water temperature gauge. Fashioned it myself out of a freaking thermometer for a fish tank and extended the lead. Or if you want to go high, Brad, you got the Hawk 2, right? And understanding what those temperatures are. So weather and water temperature are going to be big, big, big elements there in getting a read to ascertain where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
I would say one of the biggest in maybe the most important thing to understand is the forage base, right? This could be a whole podcast on its own, but controversial statement coming up. Stop studying muskies and start studying what they're eating. Understand the forage base.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Number one, what is the forage base? If you walk
out of your particular system, right.
Right. If you walk out on a body of water And it, this is, you know, Lake whatever. And you don't have a general idea of what forage is available to muskies there.
Right, right.
You're not going to dial in quickly. Okay? Now, it's not as exciting as studying up what muskies will do. What will a muskie do? It doesn't matter what a muskie will do because he's going to do what the forage base is doing. Period. Whether you're on a shad base, whether you're on a Cisco base, whether you're on a crappie base body of water, it could be perch, it can be a litany of things, walleye, rough fish, your suckers, your carp, whatever is available to those muskies, the forage base is going to far more dictate what is happening with muskies than any other element.
Yeah.
Right? What do suckers do in a cold front?
Go deep.
Right? What do Cisco's do in a cold front? What do, you know, shad do in a cold front? What do walleye do? How do they respond? I don't believe for a second that the shift in weather dictates so much what muskies do than where the forage has gone. Right? Muskies are pretty comfortable in anything from 30 degrees to 80 degree water in general. Pretty big swing there, right? So, forage. Now, we've got our downscan sonar like we talked about. You might have more on your boat, but if you got downscan, we can all be there. Understanding what the forage is doing. So, what forage is present? Now, the way you understand what forage is present in a body of water is some research. You can talk to Joe Schmo. He might be bluegill fishing. You might have some local knowledge on a body of water. Yeah. But you've got to have a concept of what is there. What is the dominant forage base on that body of water? Now, researching and learning what that forage base does. Okay? So, what is the seasonality of our forage base? That might be the most important element in muskie success. What is the forage doing seasonally? Right? And then how does said forage react during inclement weather, temperature shifts, all our barometric pressure stuff we're talking about? How does it react? So, that takes research. We could sit here for 4 days.
Yeah.
And talk about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with this, what's going on with that as we go on here. You know, so you don't want to relegate yourself to a single thing. I don't want to sit here and wax about shad or wax about walleye, but become a student of the predominant forage base.
I've got a good example of that too. There was a bizarre lake in southern Wisconsin I used to fish, where in Wisconsin bullheads are usually not a primary food source, but after research we found out it was, and it was one of the most difficult lakes to understand where to, you know, in terms of reading the water and trying to locate muskies because of that. And like you're saying about these different forage bases too, about the different species, you know, the common ones in Wisconsin, like you mentioned, you know, bluegills, perch, crappie, sometimes Cisco, suckers. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, what happens to these? How do they react in these different, you know, it's probably easy to say that if you got a hard cold front that these, you know, these fish are going to move deeper and in great looking musky weather, they might move up into the weeds. But do some of these species actually break apart and not school up, or they're more difficult to target? Well, there's a lot of questions there that I have.
Right. And so that's going to be indicative of the seasonality and the weather patterns and just the life cycle. And I think that's the biggest thing of, like, when it comes to the forage base, is understanding what the life cycle of the forage base is.
Right? Mm-hmm.
When do the blah, blah, blah spawn? Right? When do the crappie spawn? When do the Cisco spawn? When do the walleye spawn? Right? And what are they doing throughout the course of the year? When do those fish that is the dominant food source on your body of water, or whatever water you're targeting, what is the dominant food source doing? Right? If the dominant food source is an open water fish, a pelagic fish, then you need to really make big adjustments. If the dominant food source is panfish, Jay, right?
Mm-hmm.
They like the edges, they like cribs, they like timber, they like all this junk, right? There you go. Pretty easy.
Well, and like you said, the spawning cycle, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these fish generally spawn in the spring, but not all of them. I think right. Perch will spawn like early fall.
Well, and you got Cisco spawns that are later. So
there you go. Yeah.
You know, we could, again, it's just one of these things of having the read. So, like, it comes back. We go, what's the weather doing? What are the water temps? Now, what are the water temps and the weather doing to the primary forage base? Who gives a crap what it's doing to the muskies, quote unquote? What is it doing to the forage? Because what's happening with the forage is going to dictate where the actively feeding muskies are. Don't care about negative and neutral. Not interested. Where are the actively feeding muskies going to be in relation to the forage? Right? Now, regardless of what the forage base might be, let's say it's Cisco's and the secondary consideration shad, whatever. You can use your down skin to understand where they are at in relation to the water, right? Depth, right? So we'll get to sort of those observations. But trusting our electronics, but having a firm grasp upon the seasonality of our primary forage, you will quickly find observable data that way. Now, what I'm getting at is this, and I've not thought it out so much, but just articulate as best I can. I am on a shad-based body of water, right, Jay? And okay. I walk out there, and I need to find schools of shad. There are two ways to do that. There is driving around aimlessly until I run into them and go, bingo. And that took me...
Found one.
Right, mm-hmm. It may have taken me 5 minutes or 5 hours. Or I go, okay, shad are running deeper this time of year, and they should be on this X, Y, and Z because their seasonality and their life cycle dictates and their preferences dictate that they will be in this kind of zone. So what
efficiency.
I've done... Right, I am efficient. So the weather, the water temp, and an understanding of the forage base will quickly get me to the zone that muskies that are actively feeding will be in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if it's walleye based, and I understand that walleye are holding now at 25 feet. Now, that's the dominant food source in this body of water we're making up here, right? And walleye are right now, their general hold is at 25. In the evenings, they come up to 15, right? That's really going to skew how I'm presenting, right? Get a read. Make an assessment where I go, I'm not going to be up there beating the banks in that body of water.
Right, right.
Why? What the muskies are cued in on, the dominant food source,
doesn't exist there.
Doesn't exist there. Why would a muskie be there? Right? Logic would bode that we need to be presenting deep. Now, how do we present at those depths? How do we present consistently at 12 to 15 feet? Well, we need to troll, or we need to jig.
Right.
Right? So get a read on things and you go, wow. You know, you may be, and we get questions all the time at the podcast and at the app. You know, I live on this body of water, and I've been 2 years, I've been pounding this and that, and nothing's happened. You might be just not even close to them because they are predating on a heavy population of deep running fish. I mean, if there's no food there, it does a muskie no good to be there. They're lazy. Muskies are simply lazy. They're going to stay near and be near where the food is. So, taking that in consideration, we want to be hyper, hyper, hyper focused on the dominant forage areas, right? Now, what you're going to have to do is, and we can talk about it, and we've referenced it on other podcasts about this forage does this, that does this. You need to assess what is the dominant forage base in the lake. What is the main thing that the average Joe Schmo is here to catch?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Here's a boat full of ding-dongs, and they're out here crappie fishing. Right? Or I'm on a body water. There's body waters, Jay, that it's bullhead catfish. You need to become a student of the forage base. What are those critters doing, and why are they doing it? One of the biggest exploits, and I'd say the most important thing to do, is understand the life cycle of the predominant forage and learn how to exploit it. When you understand when the spawn is for these forage bases, it's game on like Donkey Kong. Right? You guys up north have heard forever the Cisco spawn. Right? When the Ciscos are spawning, it's a big bite. Right?
It's talked about a lot.
Uh-huh. But when you have your shad spawn, you have your bullhead spawn, you have, whether it be walleye, whether it be sauger, whatever the dominant forage base is, you know you can count on some very serious bites and some very serious windows of activity at that point, because it opens things up so wide to muskies are going to exploit that. So the more you learn about your dominant forage base, it is going to allow you to understand where they're at quicker, based on weather, water, and their seasonal movements, and then when to exploit it the most, right? Now, one thing that could be said, let's say you have a deep running forage base, there's something to be considered there about, you know, they might turn to a secondary base when you have a body of water that's mixed. Let's say you have a body of water, Jay, that has shad and panfish, right?
Right, right.
Well,
two predominantly different types of right. forage. It's not like crappie and bluegill, which are often shallow. But
right, yeah. But let's say like shad and crappie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, having an understanding of both of those and go, okay, the shad are doing X, Y, and Z, and the crappie are doing X, Y, and Z, but when it's time for the crappie spawn, the muskies will be in that zone.
Yep.
And it might be, like I said, understanding what's going on with the food may be more important than understanding what's going on with the muskies, because that's literally the same thing. Right? Don't care about the muskies per se. What is their food doing? What is the easiest food to get a hold of? Right? Spawning fish are super easy. They're not concerned with anything other than the spawn. Muskies take advantage of that. Right?
Yep.
Shallow, when they're shallow, muskies can take advantage of that. You know, when things are super deep and open water, muskies will take advantage of that, but they might turn their attention to a secondary consideration. So the hierarchy will become dominant. What is the second most dominant thing here? What is present and what are they doing? So if I know if I'm fishing on a body of water that has three different types of fish that are considered bait fish or would be considered musky forage in some capacity, understanding and learning as much as you can about the seasonal movements from other anglers about those fish. I can't tell you how many times you go, okay, the crappie fishermen are fishing deep timber. Well, guess where I'm musky fishing? Deep timber. Right? Paying attention to those things is critical. Understand the forage, research the forage base on your body of water, and learn how to exploit it. Another thing, I mean, I'm just making notes here, and Jane just sort of riffing.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing to get a read on, and you touched on it for a second earlier, is wind, right? Wind and current, and I think they're synonymous in some capacity, right?
It's true, yeah.
Wind and current both move things. Right now, wind and current don't care about seasonality. Wind and current don't care about weather patterns. All right, you get some of these big northern zones, a lot of Minnesota, but the wind never stops, right? Some of these places, it's just howling all the time. Okay, it could be sunny and it's howling, and it can be cloudy and it's howling. Wind and current are going to dictate the movement of the bait fish, therefore the muskies will move, right? Now, getting a read on current, you know, we've talked in different river podcasts, we've talked about some different stuff, but current is going to set up staging areas, seams, and some side cut stuff, and where muskies will be in relation to. But wind, Jay, I mean, like you were talking, John, I knew you're a big wind reader, the big wind reader kind of guy. Talk about like how you play the wind. What's the stuff that you're thinking about observing the wind? Is it started blowing this morning and it matters? Is it a 3-day wind, a two-day wind? What's your thought on wind?
A lot of thoughts on wind, you know, and a lot of it ties into weather patterns and history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got 2 days where the wind's blowing the same direction, it's obviously a plus.
Mm-hmm.
You go to that area where the wind has been blowing into, and it should have some kind of focus with the forage elements and hence the musky following. But we don't always have that luxury, you know. All summer long, and I'm sure you can attest to this because you were here for almost, 3 weeks, and we fished every day just about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a completely different wind every day. I don't think once we had the wind blow, you know, the same direction for 2 days in a row and multiple fronts. And that makes it more difficult. But in general, if the wind's kind of northerly, it kind of dictates post frontal, and it kind of dictates falling temps usually, or fish deeper. If the wind is westerly or southerly, generally, for the most part, that dictates you might want to start out with some speed and relatively shallow. And I'm talking about kind of summer. I'm not talking about late November or something here, but
no.
And another thing would be the clouds too, and reading the clouds too. If you've got darkness in the clouds, you've got some humidity, and that's always a plus. And it usually dictates some kind of positive feeding. If you can put, you know, two and two together, of course.
Right.
Lack of clouds or just puffy white clouds probably dictating some kind of shift towards the northerly direction and post frontal.
And something you consider regarding wind, though, it's like the duration. We've talked about this before, like
how stability and
how will wind affect things? And probably the foremost consideration be what is the duration of this wind? You know, if the wind changes in the morning and we go from east to west, it's not going to shift forage, right?
Not that quickly, not at all.
But if it's a 2-day wind, a 3-day wind, which goes back to our weather observation, right? Have we been paying attention to the wind? Because you can take everything else into consideration we've just looked at, right? And the day you're fishing, you know, it's been the wind shifted the night before, but it shifted heavy or blah, 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 blah. Things can be skewed heavily, right? So having a feel for what the wind's been doing, because for a lot of years, you've always heard fish the windy side. Well, if it just started blowing that night, it's not going to shift things on day one. It takes time to move the food chain, right? So that the wind sort of goes back to aspect number one we discussed, which is that observation of what is happening for a duration of time. Now, the flip side of that coin is you're looking at your weather data, you've been paying attention. You know, if we've got to look at the weather in general in that regard, would be if it's been blowing to the, you know, on the westerly side of this lake for 3 days before you head out, why are we even wasting our time on the east? Right? I really think it takes 2 days to shift things, right? The first day it may not really move things terribly much. but we need to be paying attention to that historical thing on the wind. Now, current as well, like I said, current, if you're in a reservoir, you're in a river, is going to supersede most of this, right? So if we're getting a read on a river or something that's a reservoir, something that has dominant current, is all bets are off if the current kicks up, because the current will dictate their movement. Well, now I can get a whole other reservoir river thing about seasonality and staging and structural elements.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's just quite often such a massive influence when, you've told me before that, you know, you've been on some reservoirs that have fluctuated feet,
in a morning,
you know, it's like,
and that all
supersedes wind. Yeah.
All bets supersedes everything. Weather, water doesn't matter. Right. All bets are off. Forget about it. But current and wind should be considered. The other thing is as far as that read, you know, so I'm going to step back for 2 seconds, which is understanding your weather pattern. Where are you at in that pattern? Right. Are we up? Are we down? Your water temperature. Is it colder in the shallows? Is it colder in the open water? Understanding where they should be. Now, all of this is culminating with the forage movement, right? Where's the forage going to be? What's the forage doing? What's the dominant forage? What's the secondary forage? What's the tertiary forage doing, right? How is current and wind playing on that forage, right? You see where we're going here, Jay? It's all about bay.
Absolutely.
How is the current and the wind playing on the forage and the seasonality of the forage base, right? Do you know what wind does? Wind breaks forage up. You got tiny shiners and little minnows and you got all this stuff. What we're looking for is densely packed bait. Densely packed bait, strength in numbers, right? Stratified bait's tough. I want really, you know, densely packed bait. I want groups. I want roaming herds. Now,
absolutely.
Now, you get that when you have stable weather. But more on that later at some other point as far as like reading the graph, but you can understand the influence of all those elements on the forage bases based upon what you're seeing on the graph. You're seeing stratified bait, you go, okay, things are shifting, blah, 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 blah. Now, for all those elements, structure and map work, right? So let's say that somebody's got from step one, weather, step two, water temperature, step three, forage base, step four, is there current, is there wind present, right? And I don't mean 5-mile-an-hour wind, I mean dominant wind, right? And I think we're both talking the same thing, Jay. This is not a breeze, this is a blow with what we're considering. Structure, map work. What corollaries are there between all of the above elements and the structure? Right? So you go, whoa, now structure's at play. So scenario, I'll just make it up as I go here. I have a falling barometer. Things are bad, right, Jay? Frontal movement is on the bad swing for me. I'm going to have, you know, I'm not going to have high bright sun, but I'm going to have patchy stuff with big wind, right?
Okay.
Temperature drop a few degrees, whatever. I'm going to read my water temperature up on a point, and it's cold on the point, but I go out and it's stable off the point, right? Well, now I've got a forage base that say it's walleye based. I don't expect those walleye to move up that point. So now my main strategy is going to be on deep points, right? What structural elements answer that question? So if you understand that walleye right now this time of year are on points and sharp breaks, going back to the map work, what points and sharp breaks do I have to work with? So I understand the weather, I understand the water temperature, I understand what forage-based muskies are targeting, I understand how current and wind could have influenced those elements. Where's the forage going to be? Where can my map work come into play to direct me quickly to the places that forage will be and therefore lead to actively feeding muskies? Okay. So what am I going to look for? You know, what am I looking for here? The structure and the map work is the final element of reading these where you go, okay, shatter on brake lines. They should be 10 to 15 feet. Now I have an understanding of my body of water where these brake lines are present. So I have target zones quickly. So what I'm trying to do is draw corollaries between all the above elements and draw lines between structure and the seasonality of the muskie's preferred forage base. So shatter at 10 to 15 feet. Let's say rough fish are holding 10 to 12 or 5 to 6, whatever. Understanding that is going to quickly draw you to those areas. And what I'll say is this. I've had a lot of people send me maps over the years. We've been into the podcast, or I've sat down with people, Jay, and we do map work, right?
Right, right.
It's good stuff, but it depends on what eyes you're looking at the map with. All right? What do you mean by that? What I'm drawn to off the knee-jerk reaction are dominant structures, right? Dominant flats, side cuts, feeder streams, whether it be points, pumps, whatever. But in the moment, at any given moment, I am drawn to the importance of staging areas for the preferred forage that become highlighted in my mind. Okay? So if you look at on what I'm looking at in July versus what I'm looking at in November differ greatly.
Right.
What becomes that flashing road sign, I'm here, look at me, are completely different. Now, often they're adjacent to those obvious things, your big points, your big humps, you know, your creek channels, whatever they might be present. But the spot on spot, the important things, the dialed in zones differ greatly. So understand where the forage is at, where the weather's going to drive them, where the water temps are going to drive them, is wind or current an influence. Now dial in on the structure. Now, that brings us to another consideration. What does that structure say? So let's say we are on, whatever, Cisco spawn, and they love bars, Jay, right?
Yeah.
Points and reefs and all that stuff. Well, your structure quickly is that, right? But if it's a matter of crappie spawn, and they're going to spawn shallow, and they like hang around timber and all this crap, well, what structural elements are going to lead to timber? Does what structure ties to the cover that they prefer? I think even with Cisco's is a pelagic fish, they open water roam, so it's not a matter of like structures leading them to where they want to be, but they sort of get there no matter what. You know what I'm saying? There's open water fish. I mean, maybe whatever. Maybe they're navigating by the stars, but they end up where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, right.
But structural elements will lead you in and out of these zones where you're going to have your dominant amount of fish. So, you know, what's the forage doing? How are they grouped? Why are they grouped? You know, what is their life cycle? And what is the structure that they're using at that certain point in time? Right? Going to tie in. Now, the structural thing that I would say is this, that movement, the in, the out, up and down these structures is dictated by, number one, our weather. So it's all cyclical. It all ties together. But if I understand, like we talked about, we mentioned earlier that trolling fish that we did the video on, and you went, well, the weather looks great, like musky weather, but the bait's saying not to do what you want to do, which would be bucktails and topwater, right? For a big fish, comes down to our downscan sonar and relying on that. So that body of water that we're on, Jay, that the predominant food source on that's perch. right? So that's I'm referencing a perch system. Mm-hmm. So perch love weed beds. They love edges. You know, they're a little predator themselves. They're a panfish at the end of the day.
And they also love deep mud, picking up bugs. So that's two different areas.
Now, the sonar had been telling us for the week before about bug hatches.
There you go.
Right?
Yes, that's right.
And now the wind and the clouds was telling us shallow, get shallow. Mm-hmm. Shallow's where to be. Hello, mm-hmm. Look at me, weather. The weather's screaming shallow. Drizzly, you know, big puffy, you know, moist clouds. But, you know, musky weather. But the bait's saying nay. No, we're down here. Right? So, at a certain point, the life cycle of the forage will supersede the weather in some capacity, but the weather will dictate activity level, right? The water temp will dictate activity level. So that became a matter of understanding the structure and the preferred depth ranges of the forage. Now, how do we get that quickly? We went out and we went, 1 + 1 = 2, which is the forage is on this zone. They're there because there is a bug hatch, right? We know that. So the forage, the muskie's food is actually feeding on other food, and they are in a specified depth zone. And we understand that depth zone, quickly able to find that because we understand what that forage is doing within a narrow window. And we used our electronics, our downscan sonar to go, okay, they're at 12 feet, right? So they're going to be somewhere between 16 and 10. We knew that. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, how do you know that? The seasonality of those fish, when bug hatches happen, it's generally in a body of water like that. I mean, when you go to that central main basin that's just muck, maybe you'll get it, but generally you won't. You sort of get on that first contact point. So, you know, quickly, within 25 minutes, we're able to dial in because we go, the weather is saying this is, there's action happening. Weather is happening. Activity levels are going to go up, right? Water temps are pretty steady, so that wasn't important. But the forage base and a knowledge of the forage base, right, in conjunction with the structure, was the ticket. So conceptually what we're going for is you don't have to have all of them. That's what I'm trying to get at. So we got weather, water temp, forage base, current and wind, structure, right? They don't always align. And that's why I brought that fish up. There's no way it was warmer water temperature wise at 12 and a half feet, Jay. Wasn't happening. It was cooler down there, right?
True. It was summer. Yep.
So it wasn't like they're down there, but the weather said hot fish. The forage bed said deep fish, right? The structure work and the map work said this is the zone, right? So what I'm looking for, go ahead.
What you're trying to say is if you don't pull in all this information mm-hmm. and try to consider all five areas that we've been covering here that mm-hmm. we've covered, you're probably not going to get there. It might get you closer and it might save you time that day. But if you do consider and plug in all five, you can make it happen.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't have to have all five.
And they won't all align.
Then they won't all align. That's what I'm saying.
If you don't consider them, you won't eliminate that.
And here's the thing.
I like it.
Water temperature, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dude, my buddy Tim, I'm fishing with my team from the Netherlands.
Timmy.
And him and his brother Rowan are out right now. The weather doesn't say good fishing, but they had a four fish day today.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And it's not a water temp thing, right? It's a structure thing and a forage base thing.
Yeah.
Right? Weather's bad. Water temp's bad. But those two elements tied. So I'm trying to tie those five key elements together in some capacity to stitch together a game plan and do it quickly. Right? Now, what we've been saying on the podcast for 3 years is make an assessment, make an observation. Now, you might make the wrong one, but you got to sit down and go, what did I read wrong? Right? Now, I'm not saying just because you understand the weather and you understand the forage base and you understand the structure and you understand current and or wind if it's applicable and the water temperature. If you understand those five elements, that doesn't mean you're going to pick the right bait. You might be casting too fast or trolling too fast or going too deep. Now, if you understand where the forage is and you understand the structure, you should not be fishing too deep. Right? And if you understand how water temp affects the seasonality and the activity levels, that will dictate how fast you're fishing. Right? So those are the five I could think of as far as that. So here, it just really boils down to tying them together. All right, Jay, I just had to take the step out break there for a second. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Folks, if I'm rambling, I apologize. So they say they love the rants, Jay. I'm ranting. We're ranting here.
Yeah, we're trying our best.
You know, so we talked about sort of drawing the corollaries between all these elements, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So again, forage knowledge, forage knowledge, forage knowledge, forage knowledge. You know, if it's perch, you better become a student of perch. And something that hit me when I was taking a quick break there. Sometimes it's important to spend the time to fish for that forage base.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right. Now, and I'm not big on, I mean, I get it. I get the, I'm dialed in on big fish, right? Well, if you're dialed on the bigger forage base, you can dial in on bigger fish. Where are the adults in that community living? Where are the big walleye? Right? Where are the big crappie? Where are the, you might find some bigger muskies in that vicinity because they want a higher caloric intake. So that's not always true, but it's just something to consider. The one thing that I would touch on that sort of ties a lot of this together, Jay, man optics. We all, you know, pan optics exist, but there's man optics, right?
I did not know that.
Man optics. You got two eyeballs. Hopefully, some of us only have one. It happens. But using what, you know, you got your maps, you got your read on thing. It's just some basic looky-looing, some basic paying attention. But what I'll say is this, is like using your eyes and your ears. It's so important. You always hear about paying attention to edge animals and birds, right? When you're driving home and you're driving out in the morning, there's deer all over the place. It's going to be a good day. And guess what? If edge animals are moving, it's generally a shallow bite. Or shallow in relation to the seasonality.
I agree.
Right? If birds are dive bombing, loons are actively feeding, shallower bite.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's just something to take into consideration. You know, reptiles, turtles, snakes, if they're out and moving, they're boogie woogieing, they're setting up on trees, things are warm, things are coming up, you're going to find a shallower bite. But one thing I would say is this is super important to pay attention to or at least consider. Let's say we're trying to get a read on one body of water, right? Is coming up with, and it's something I do every single day, I have three key points of observation for forage, right? You go, what does that mean? What I'm referring to is I have three areas that I check daily to understand what the forage is doing. So let's say that it's shad based, it's walleye based, whatever forage it is. There's three spots that I've dialed in on that are not, I don't care about finding muskies. I'm focused on finding that forage and observing what they are doing to give me the read for what I need to do that day. Right? So having not one, not two, but three will give you a baseline. So I have a shallow place, a mid place, and a deep place where I look for forage fish. Right? Now I'm going to use my down scan, you know, but if I go into like, it's something as simple, Jay, and I've done on third body's water, you can even check like the boat ramps. Are there minnows on the boat ramp? Well, that's a pretty good sign that we got a shallow water bite going.
Right.
Right. Are there bait fish in this shallow zone? You know, where are the crappie staged at?
Well, how many times you go out and make the first cast and, you know, a perch follows your bait.
Mm-hmm. Tells you something there.
Yeah.
So coming up with something that is an observable baseline, you've got to have something to work with. So, and what I'm getting is this, there's not some magical thing where you go out and you look at your sonar and say, well, these bait fish are at 2 feet deep and these bait fish are at 7 feet deep and I'm going to do this. No, what you're going to do is you're going to hit three spots before you even make a cast and go nothing, something, something. Right? Or it's they're shallow, they're mid, they're deep. And you're going to find bait fish. You're going to work on finding bait fish on your body of water. And now every time you're going back and you're observing what's happening. So you have a baseline. You understand what is going on that day. Because what you're going to do, you're still going to do what you're going to do structure fishing, which you're going to start shallow in the morning, you're going to go mid, you're going to go deep, and you're going to work your bait way back in. This doesn't circumvent any of that stuff. But once you start paying attention to looking for the bait fish, start looking for the forage base and understanding where they're at, it's going to get you dialed in faster. So there'll be a corollary where you go, I checked shallow and nothing happened, but I checked mid and there was a ton of bait fish, and then I checked deep and there was nothing. And then you go out and you do this stellar bulldog pass or this stellar tube pass or stellar trolling pass and you whack three fish and go, wow, there's something there. Whoa. And the next time you see it from observable data, you do the same thing. Right? You can start drawing corollaries from what you're seeing on that graph. Because I think one thing when I talked about when we first started, and I'm rambling here, about all we have is downscan temperature and depth as far as a baseline read for everybody, keep it fair and keep it even, is once you learn how to read that downscan and you learn how to exploit that based on everything else we've talked about, you start getting a feel, right? So there's a read on the water going, this is what should be going on, right? And now I got a feeling what's happening on my body of water because I've been here a million times and I'm starting to put together strong data. Because at the end of the day, what this boils down to for me is I've got strong data to work with, right? So every time you go out, you take the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it takes, and you find three spots and you observe what is going on. And you mark them on your GPS, and that's your first three stops, and you scan them with your down scan. And then you start going, well, every time I hit point A and there are fish at 10 feet, I catch a muskie when I do this. You see what I'm saying?
Well, without it, you know what you're doing?
You're guessing.
You're guessing, and you're pulling the old Al Linder commercial. Hey, right. That looks like a good spot over there. Don't let luck or feeling determine your fishing success.
Right. So
you want to waste all day just running and gunning because they should be doing this?
And you talked about taking screenshots of the weather, right?
Yeah.
Pictures of your fish finder. Mm-hmm. Every time. Every day when you go out, you should take a picture of your fish finder when you find the forage. The reason being, your brain is going to make some made up shit where you go, they were at 4 feet. Now they were at 8. Right? Now, the joy of us filming Musky Shop TV, the way things happen are not what happens. Right? Your brain's going, he hit on the figure eight. Now he hit 10 feet out. Right. It just the moment the adrenaline time skews things in some regard. Right. Take a photo. And what I want you to do is focus on three spots right? Now, not three spots that don't have forage. I want you to drive around till you find forage, right? And you go, I'm on a shad-based body of water, and I'm going to find three shad spots. And I'm going to hit those three spots. It's going to take me 10 minutes every time I come out here. And every time I come out, I'm going to take a picture when I hit my mark, and I'm going to look for bait. And then I'm going to start putting the puzzle together where I go, well, spots two and three had shad on them, and I cut a fish at X, Y, and Z. Or I had a follow. Right? And we're going to start just stitching this thing together.
Yeah, at the very least, you're going to learn something if you put the pieces together and, right. and you know, compare and contrast from previous days when you get home at night.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm getting at. It's like if you have your three baseline spots that you check every time, they don't have to be musky spots. They just have to be your baseline. Okay, this is what's going on here. This is what's going on here. This is what's going on here. One, two, three. And you compare. And you compare every trip. And you go, I didn't catch anything. You know, mm-hmm. I was trolling. Right. I was trolling bucktails. And this is what the screens looked like at this juncture. And yeah. then next week, I was catching fish on bucktails trolling. And this is what it looked like. Whoa. Now, when you go out and make your read on the water and you read the weather and the wind and the current and you read everything we're talking about, and now you have that those three screenshots, okay. Now you're putting the puzzle together, right?
And you know what you can do? Another little tip would be is put that on your computer. Put it on your laptop or whatever.
Yeah.
And when you put that on there, rename it. Rename it with the date and just type in as long as you want, mm-hmm. all the information you want. And that's the yep. name of the file.
Right.
And then just, you know, then file them under August, and file them under September or whatever.
Well, and that, you know,
some cool thing to do.
It's not exciting, but it's what I do. I mean, it's literally, you go, how do you put the puzzle together? How do you do it? Guiding. How do you do it every day? How do you stay somewhat consistent? How do you dial in? You know, it's data. I mean, it's at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you know, I'm the king of the musky Excel spreadsheet here. You know, got 20 years of spreadsheets on they're eating this, they're eating that. This is the water temp. It was doing this, and this is what you did, and X, Y, and Z. And you go, well, wow, I'm just looking for this. So, you know, from the guy we started with, which is I walk out on the water and I got Saturday here and I've got to pay attention to the weather and this, to now I'm building patterns, right? Now, the three-spot methodology for me gives me a modicum of relative confidence where I go, I'm checking a shallow spot, a mid-spot, and a deep spot where my primary forage base is located, and I'm taking a screenshot every time I launch, right?
Yep.
Now pay attention to when you launch. You might do it at sun up 1 week and at 4 o'clock the other, but now you're going, okay, when I launch later in the day, the mid spot's really good and there's a bunch of forage up. But you can pay attention to that. Now, after you take that observation, you take that data down, and you log that data, you take your screenshot in your phone that tells you, guess what, the temp and the depth and how deep the forage is. I don't care if you got a hummingbird or a freaking, you know, monkey bird. There should be telling you where the fish are at depth-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. But after about 6 months of that, and you go, every time the fish are at 7 feet and all I do is run a shallow raider, I'm catching fish. Right?
Yeah.
Take the mystery out of it. And that's what we're always trying to do on the podcast, demystify what's going on. But logging that data as easily as possible, like you said, from the advent of the smartphone makes it far easier instead of trying to keep a notebook and all this stuff. But marking those spots. Now, the other thing I would say is this is, you know, you'll start picking up on, and I said man optics, the observation of what's going on. You're going to find out that there are days where element number one, the weather just doesn't even play, Jay. Right?
Yeah.
Where you go, I've got spots one, two, and three that I'm checking every time on my graph. And, I had a bad call front, but I caught four fish. And there's a corollary between there was shallow forage on spot number one that I check every time, and things were still clicking. Now, can I explain what that is? No. You know, there's outliers every time, right? But you'll find that where you go, it will augment your game plan drastically once you have a baseline. That's what I'm getting at. It's like, if I've gone out for, at this point, 20 years, right? And I'm checking my three spots and I'm doing my thing. And I go, okay, well, I've got all this data. I don't care what the weather's doing if spots one and two tell me what's going on. You see where I'm going at? Where the basic, 100%. Right. At the end of the day, the basic read is taking all these elements and trying to pull it together in your head, trying to pull it together. Okay, this is what should be going on. Now, once we start logging data, once we start logging what is happening every time we launch the boat and we have at least 3 points, you know, I've got some other stuff up my sleeve, but I've got 3 points I hit every time. Not, I don't say points. When I'm saying a point, I'm not saying a point as a structural. I have three waypoints that I check, right? That are forage holding locations, just for clarification.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But if I go out and check my 3 points and I've got a nasty cold front, but my shallow water waypoint where forage should not be in a cold front, and the forage is there, guess what I'm going to do, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to fish like the cold front never happened. Until the muskies tell me otherwise, but if the bait, which is observable, right. And we talked about when we started what is actually happening. Not conceptually happening, what is actually happening. Because sometimes it doesn't matter. Now, why? I don't know. And there's nobody in this world that is a muskie fisherman can tell you why some cold fronts do not negatively affect muskies. But it happens. There's times it doesn't matter. And there's times that there's pressure coming and it looks stormy and it's drizzling and they won't move to save their life. I've seen it. I've fished it.
Yep.
Where it looks like muskies should be, literally, they should be lined up to jump in your boat one after another. You don't even have to hook them. Just hold the net out. And they won't move. Right? But there's times where it's high, bright sun, dead, flat, calm. Things are crappy and they're biting like there's no tomorrow. Now, the only way you can dial in on that and exploit that is having those baselines where you go, huh? Last time was a cold front. There's a bunch of walleye on this point, and I caught one, you know, throwing a depth rater. And guess what? 3 weeks later, it's the same scenario. Guess what I'm going to do?
Yep.
That's what I'm talking about, reading the water as far as dialing in on that. I mean, I could go on forever. So, what's some of your key stuff, Jay? I'm rambling here. I'm sorry. I've hijacked the whole podcast.
Key stuff. I like it. And it's all about tying in everything together. You know, weather's important most of the time.
Right.
It's going to dictate where you should be and how you should fish and at what speed you can fish.
Right.
But like you just said, not all the time.
Yep.
Differences in water temps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the comparative temps between, you know, mid-lake and the super shallow area.
Yeah.
Knowing the forage base.
Yeah.
Current.
I mean,
there's a lot of variables, and are all four or five going to tie in at the same time on any given time, on any given trip, on any given day? Probably not, but most of them will.
Right.
And if that can dial you in and get you onto muskies within 45 minutes versus beating the water all day doing the wrong thing because the fish aren't there. It's a win.
That's what we're getting.
That's all we're trying to get at.
I mean, you know, it's logic and it's reason. You know, like you said, don't let luck or feelings.
Yeah. And stuff, man.
And sometimes luck and feeling, we go, let's try over there. Well, let's try this. I mean, I feel like a lot of guys, and it's not a bash, I'm not being negative. I feel like a lot of muskie anglers just are either following others, following trends, or just guessing. And what we're selling and what we're talking about right here is not exciting. You know, you go out and you go, here's my three spots I'm going to take, and I'm going to sit here for 10 minutes and contemplate this. It's not exciting, but it's effective. And to me, at the end of the day, guess what's exciting to me? Catching muskies.
Yep.
Happy clients, happy friends. And for me, it's a matter of this whole podcast is not something you're going to spend an hour on the water. It is 10, 15 minutes of your time. So if you lose 10 minutes of casting, Jay, right? A trip. But you catch 50%, 30%, 20% more muskies, is it worth it?
100% yes.
Right? This is what I do every day. Every single day. Right? I take these. I've thought about it from a guide brain. And like I said, I mean, how I'm stitching it together, this is what I do. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't care. But this works for me. And it works consistently with big fish in the net. Which is stitching those elements together and then taking the observable data, right? What is actually going on with the weather? What is actually going on with the wind? What is actually going on with the forage? And putting those things together to formulate a game plan as quickly as possible. So it's a difference of, I feel like a lot of people, when you go out, you know, they start out and they have, this is what they should be doing. And they spend 2 hours on that and they make a change in their game plan. Now, you know, we've hardly even talked about any baits at all, which we could spend a second on, which would be, you know, if things are bad, if I'm seeing, if I have my shallow plot, my shallow point, my midpoint, my deep point, where I'm checking for forage, where forage should be consistently, right? So if they're not deep, they're mid, they're shallow, which comes back to structure fishing. But that check, that 3-point check every day is going to dictate what my first presentation is, Jay.
Yep.
So if the the forage is at mid depth and I've got sort of weather, middle of the road weather, well, middle of the road weather means middle of the road depths generally, which means mid-level presentations. Right, I might be on tubes, I might be on glides, I might be on this, that, and the other. So taking all these things in consideration is going to dictate what are you throwing, where you're throwing it, and how many fish you're going to encounter. And I can't sort of articulate it enough in that regard, which is focusing on observable data and how to interpret it. Because I think, and I'm not talking about fish finders here, we all have the same things available to us, data-wise. If we're, you know, side scan, down scan, I don't care, whatever. But how we view that data and what we do with that data and how we apply tactics to cater to it is all I'm trying to get at.
Yep. Cool.
You know?
Cool.
That's it. Whatever. Shut up, he says.
Woo!
Whoa, rant Hello. Of the century, boys. I'm sorry.
Good stuff.
Jay, flash sales at the Muskie Shop the rest of the week.
Yep.
If you haven't gotten a mini Titan, if you haven't signed up for it, they're coming here shortly, guys. Bunch of new colors on the big Titans. Jay, I rambled for way too long. I'm sorry you had to listen to that.
I love it.
All great right. stuff tonight. Say goodnight, Jay Bird.
Night, guys. Thank you.
Good night.